Welcome to the fifth episode of our Digging Deeper podcast series. With it being Neurodiversity Celebration Week this week, this episode is focused on neurodiversity in the built environment. So what is neurodiversity, you might ask? Neurodiversity refers to brain differences, so conditions like autism and ADHD are variations of the human brain. At UCEM, our disability and wellbeing team work hard to meet our neurodiverse students' needs, and we strive to make learning with us as inclusive as possible. With our online learning programmes catering for professionals in the built environment, I was intrigued to learn more about the experiences of people with neurodiversity within the workplace. The civil service is striving to make the workplace more inclusive, and in this podcast, I hope to learn more about the work government departments are doing and how this can be replicated across the built environment. So joining me today is Zoe Bacon, Property Apprenticeship Manager at the Office of Government Property. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Andrew.
I'm also joined by Miranda Foster, Senior Manager, Affordable Housing Products at Homes England and founder of the Homes England Neurodiversity Network. Hi, Miranda.
Morning, Andrew.
And my final guest is Jenny Offord, Senior Planning and Enabling Manager at Homes England and also a student on UCEM's MBA in Construction and Real Estate. Hi, Jenny.
Good morning.
Good morning, all. So, firstly, I would like to ask a few questions to Zoe. So how did you find yourself in the role you are currently in?
Well, during my civil service career, I spent the most time working either property or HR. I spent 8 years working in the HM Revenue and Customs Estate team, managing their properties, including things like PFI contract, direct leases. And I spent 5 years in HR specialising in recruitment. So my current job is a beautiful blend of both HR and property. And when my former property colleague contacted me to tell me this role was being advertised, it felt like fate, almost as if it'd been created with me in mind.
Well, always good to fall into a job like that then. One which is ideal. And if you could just tell us a bit more about what your role comprises.
So in my role, I'm here to work with and support departments to use property apprenticeship to meet their capability needs, to build up a pipeline of wonderfully diverse, talented people, both from inside and outside the civil service. And I'm here to support property apprentices and graduates throughout their development programmes and to celebrate and promote the brilliance of a career in the government property profession.
And what departments do you work with and what's the relationship with them?
I work across a range of different government departments, so from Homes England to DWP, Defence Infrastructure Organisations, Evaluation Office, Department of Education to the Ministry of Justice and so on. I like to think of my relationship with them as a collaborative one. I'm here to help departments build pipelines of talented, diverse people ready to start their property career, to provide them with guidance and support as how they can support their apprentices and to help train their apprentice managers and mentors so that them and their apprentices get the most out of their apprenticeship programmes.
And how did you come across UCEM and what is your work like with UCEM?
So I was introduced with UCEM when I first started this job. Many of our government surveying apprentices study with UCEM. I think we have a really open and effective working relationship. We have regular meetings where we meet to discuss what is happening with our apprentices across government. We work together to address any issues and concerns. And I've learned an awful lot from our meetings, which has helped to build my knowledge of the apprenticeship. And that makes me far more effective in my role.
And how would you say the learning side of the apprenticeships has been for your apprentices? And what support is there for apprentices with neurodiversity?
So each of our apprentices that study with UCEM has an apprenticeship outcomes officer. So they're there to support the apprentices through their programme with both their personal and career progression, as well as the completion of the apprenticeship itself. So the AOO, as it's called, also provides pastoral care as well when it's needed. On top of that, UCEM has a disability and wellbeing team that provides support to those apprentices that require it, including apprentices with disabilities, learning difficulties and health conditions. A number of apprentices actually come to realise they may be dyslexic when they're studying at a degree level, and the UCEM's wellbeing team are there to support and help them with that.
So yeah, thanks for running through that, Zoe. And obviously, you know, we said about looking at the built environment, we're specifically looking at the property division of the civil service. And so also joining us today are Miranda and Jenny, who have got a few questions for here. So just firstly, what is your experience of neurodiversity?
So for me, I'm a late diagnosed autistic. I didn't get a formal diagnosis until into my 30s. I think I've spent all of my life really knowing that I felt different, but not really understanding why. I've learned to mask it to try and fit in with varying levels of success. I've powered through doing all the things that I thought I should to get along in my career. I've learned how to network. I've made myself go along to social events. I've read every book under the sun on how to be a better colleague and manager. So ultimately, I did manage to get to a place in my career doing something I loved, but paying for it in my personal life with really poor mental health. My younger brother is also autistic, but he was diagnosed at a young age. The similarities between us felt so obvious to me, but to the outside world, I learned to hide it. So I could pretend to be neurotypical, whereas he's amazing at just embracing who he is. I think all that to say that I've known for a long time that I am autistic, but because of the stigma around self-diagnosis and people going on the internet and finding things out, I felt like I had to go through the process of a formal diagnosis to make the changes that I needed for me. And it's quite a long and intense process, but getting that diagnosis was a massive relief to me. It's helped me understand why I struggle in social environments and with certain other things. It's been mind-blowing to learn about sensory processing disorder. Before, I never realised that not everyone could hear strip light buzzing, or not everyone feels nauseous when they're looking at like overly bright colours. I mean, I realised that not everyone had to go to hide in the bathroom for at least one session per conference. But I didn't know that that's because my brain was overwhelmed by taking in too much information about noise, lights, smells and so on. So having that diagnosis, it really clicked for me, and it's helped me learn more and understand about who I am and why my brain works the way that it does. It's helped me really know that what I need isn't wrong, it's just different to what the world is kind of set up for at the moment. So the other thing that with this is that learning about my own neurodiversity has made me really passionate about increasing others' understanding and acceptance, because really what I want is for the next generation coming through work to not have to feel that they have to conform to an exact way of being in order to get ahead.
And then that's, you know, really great that you're looking to do that, of course. And everyone talks about inclusivity, and this is a big part of it, and being able to listen to your experiences and understand how we can, you know, work better with everyone. So, thank you for that, Miranda. And Jenny, also, what's your experience of neurodiversity?
I think I now notice neurodiversity in all the teams that I work in. So being part of the neurodiversity network at Homes England and seeing different communication styles has really made me reflect on a personal level on strategies and approaches that work and don't work for me. But also when I'm working with others, I'm better able to see their different approaches too.
And in terms of the challenges you face, what specifically are they?
I guess it's challenges that have all been exacerbated for all of us in lockdown, is particularly around communication and finding a style that works for the group that you're talking to. So I think I now realise that my preference one day might be to be on camera, and another day I might find that just having an audio conversation is more meaningful. And I think it's this constant reflection of what's the right type of communication for that situation. And I think that expands into how we learn as well. So sometimes just listening to a podcast can be the best way to take in information. Other times you need diagrams to explain things. And I think there's, at the moment, information is often broadcast just in one way. And so sometimes there's a challenge that isn't right. And I hope that we can start to use technology to sort of offer more choice, so that the styles of communication relate better to the way that I work and others work in teams.
Great stuff. And, you know, we all spoke beforehand and I explained my sort of small grasp of neurodiversity before, you know, only recently hearing from the disability and wellbeing team at UCM what they were doing. They set up some FAQs to go on the website and starting to do more on that side. But chatting to you all before we began the recording, it was clear that the language with neurodiversity is something which is something to grapple with, basically. So Miranda, I was hoping to ask, you know, what language should be used with neurodiversity?
And thank you for asking. I think it's really important that we have these conversations. As with anyone in any marginalised group, the most important thing to do is to check with the person you're talking to, how they want to be referred to, how they identify, because it can be a very personal thing. I suppose generally it's understanding that neurodiversity is an umbrella term with lots of different conditions within that, and the alternative being neurotypical is for people who don't fall into those, that sort of neuro minority group. Another interesting thing that's happened over the last years with both the neurodiversity movement and disability rights movement is that people have moved away from what was historically seen as the best way to talk about us, being person first language, for example, a person with autism. And really that comes from a very good place, and some people still prefer that, but generally we see overwhelmingly from the community that we want to just be referred to as we are. So, for example, most of us would refer to ourselves as an autistic person rather than a person with autism. And this comes from a place of the person with autism is removing us from something that's an integral part of who we are. And it also connotes that it's a negative thing to be autistic, that there's this autism that sort of follows me around and is just there lurking, whereas it's not a negative thing, it's not a positive thing, it's just a descriptor of who I am. And overwhelmingly we're seeing in these communities that people just want to be referred to as they are. Another point to note on that is that some neurodivergent people are disabled and consider their neurodivergence to be a disability, and some don't. So it's really important not to conflate the two things, and also not to assume that because someone is neurodivergent that they also have a learning disability, because the occurrences are actually at a similar level to the neurotypical population. It's really just understanding and accepting how a person refers to themselves.
No, that's a really great explanation, and like I say, this wasn't on the original sort of question list, but it, you know, from the conversations we've been having before recording, it seemed that it was worth sort of going into this, and sometimes there can be a reticence from people about how you, the language which you do use when you're discussing, you know, these topics, and you know, with drives there from obviously the civil service and other organisations to become more inclusive. It's so important to hear, you know, from the communities who you're talking about. So there, like you say, rather than saying a person with autism, you say an autistic person. And that's something which is useful and a learning opportunity, I think, probably for anyone listening as well. So just more generally, Miranda, could you tell me about your role?
Yeah, sure. So I work for Homes England, who are the government's housing accelerator. So we work with the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government to make sure that homes are built where they're needed. My small part of that mission is really about getting affordable homes, so homes that people can afford to buy or rent, built in the areas that they're most needed. So I work in affordable housing on the policy and product side of things, with a particular interest in shared ownership. So my work's a great blend of sort of strategic thinking, but also the real sort of policy and implementation detail, which works perfectly for me and my strengths. And I also get to work quite closely with ministry on understanding their priorities and what they're doing, which has been an amazing learning curve for me.
Great stuff. And Jenny, if you could also tell me about your role with Homes England.
I'm in Homes England's Development Team South as a town planning and enabling manager. So I take sites through from acquisitions to disposals, advising on the town planning side. And I'm also the vice chair of Homes England's Neurodiversity Network. And my role in that network, it has an external industry focus. So I'm really interested in looking at how the property sector generally can embrace neurodiversity and also the role of town planning within that.
Great stuff. And yeah, that's something we'll touch upon in a little, in a, probably a couple of minutes as well, which I'll be talking with Miranda about. So with you both working in the property industry, what opportunities do you see within the property industry? And what opportunities are there? I'd ask that to Miranda.
I suppose there's a huge range of careers within property. You know, within the government property profession, there's a massive breadth of jobs that you could do. And I think particularly with the neurodiversity focus, it's about finding a role that plays to your strengths. So neurodivergent people have what's called a spiky profile. So we have extreme strengths, but also disproportionately hard challenges in areas. And that can be a real asset to the industry. So just as an example, someone who is dyslexic might have really strong 3D visual thinking skills. So that could be a real asset for planning or design work. Some neurodivergent people have amazing verbal communication skills. So it might be that they want to work in Homes England. We have people that work with external providers to sort of talk about what we're doing and get more people to build homes. So someone like me, who my strengths are in systems thinking, strategy and detail, could do well in a policy environment. I mean, I'm very fortunate to have found a role which plays to my strengths and also what I care about. And for me, that's a really important thing, is finding something out there that you're passionate about, that you really care about doing, that also plays to your strengths as a person. And for people who are graduating, there's a whole world to explore, and it's really worth taking time to find what works for you. So as an example, the Homes England graduate scheme allows our graduates to rotate to different areas and try out different roles. And I think that's fantastic for them in understanding which bits they really enjoy, which bits don't really play to their strengths. And then at the end of the sort of 2-year programme, they can then find a role that works for them.
That sounds like a very good scheme. And to have that opportunity to understand where your skills can marry up to particular roles is always a good thing, because you don't, particularly at the beginning of your career, you don't always know where your career will lie or where you'll feel best and will be getting the best out of yourself. So Jenny, what opportunities do you see within the property industry?
I agree. The property sector is so broad, and as Miranda's mentioned, taking time at the start of your career to discover and understand what you're interested in and what your strengths are is really important. And it's also helpful to find the kind of organisation that you feel most supported in. I've worked across local authorities, international property consultants, UK planning specialist firms, for developers on building sites, and now at Homes England. And those projects have ranged from small planning appeals for residential development right up to large regeneration schemes of, say, 10,000 homes. And every project has required a different skill set. So I think what I can reflect on now is that if something doesn't feel like it's capturing your strengths, it probably is time to talk to others and network widely to maybe find a different role within property that suits you, because there are so many different kinds of opportunities.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of exciting projects which you've worked on there. And kind of ties into the next question I've got here, which is about what are the triumphs and challenges you've experienced in the industry? And I know, Jenny, earlier on, you mentioned a few of the challenges of working, particularly perhaps online during the lockdown at the moment. But in general, what would you both say have been the triumphs and challenges you've experienced in property? And Miranda first.
So it's an interesting question for me, because for most of my career, I haven't had that formal diagnosis. I've just known that I haven't fit in. I've known that I've always been a bit of an outsider, awkward socially, saying the wrong thing but not really understanding why. So I think for me, probably getting a diagnosis has sort of changed how I approach things, in the things that I find challenging, I'm now more able to push back against. And I'm very aware that not everyone is fortunate enough to be in a safe enough position to do that. I mean, I'm very lucky. My manager is awesome. He lets me play to my strengths and accommodates me where needed, because he knows that's how he'll get the best work from me. And I think the challenge that a lot of people have is where they're expected to fit into a certain way of doing things. For example, things like video on, as Jenny mentioned earlier. Sometimes you'll go to meetings and the assumption is that you should have your video on. And some people really struggle if people have their video off. So it's all about finding a balance between different needs. But for example, if I have my video on, I'm very conscious that my facial expressions don't always match what a neurotypical person would be expecting, that I naturally move a lot, gesticulate a lot, fidget and so on, because that's my body's way of trying to get proprioceptive input. But if I have my camera on, I'm constantly having to monitor myself and to think about, am I showing the right facial expression? Am I being distracting by moving around too much and so on? So I think, as with any of this, being able to fit into a way of working which doesn't work for you is where the challenge lies. Everything you have to do as a neurodivergent person to fit in takes up a lot of energy. And if you're using your energy on things which really shouldn't matter, you don't have the energy and the headspace to focus on your work. So I think some traits I have benefited me. I'm quite passionate and single-minded, and I recognise that a lot of that comes from being autistic and having a good detailed memory for legislation and guidance and so on is useful. And I think through that, particularly in the industry we work in now, with sort of the property side of things, I've collected this amazing network of people who are equally passionate about it, and they're not all neurodivergent, most are neurotypical to my knowledge, but I've found some brilliant mentors, people who have become friends along the way, united by the fact that we care about it and we want to do something different. And I think, you know, in terms of a success for me, has just been that I've been able to access these amazing people that I worked alongside, who have just accepted that I am who I am, and I'm, you know, maybe a little bit odd sometimes, but it doesn't stop them, the way that they interact with me, you know, from just being natural.
Mm. And that's so important to feel comfortable at work. I mean, it's a challenge for anyone in that respect, but you know, it's good to have an employer who recognises some of the challenges you might face and can you know, accommodate and you know, work together on them. So Jenny, would you agree with some of the challenges and triumphs there, which Miranda has raised? How have you, you know, experienced the industry in that sense?
I think it's been about finding projects where I feel like I'm using my skills, as Miranda has said. And so looking back, I think the most rewarding role that I had was where I got to lead the planning strategy on a large regeneration site in North London. And it was the first role where I was based on site. And I think the neurodiversity aspect really came out because we were working with sales teams, construction teams, commercial quantity surveyors. And so we all have this different training and perspective and things that we've learned. And that meant that we all really had to be ourselves because we had different roles to play in this bigger project team. So I think I'm most comfortable where I'm using my skills, but collaborating with others that bring something different.
Mm.
I think where I've less enjoyed roles is when I've just worked in teams, wholly town planners. Most people went to similar universities and generally had a sort of fairly similar career path. And I think that felt kind of stifling, because it felt that we were just one mindset, not really being challenged as much as when I got on site and was working with all these different kinds of people. I found that every day I was learning something new.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the larger projects which you enjoy more so than maybe the ones with, you know, people with a similar skill set, perhaps.
I don't think it's the size. I think it's the teams and the atmosphere in the teams. So when you sort of understand that you aren't a bunch of people that all agree, and instead you're thinking, oh, wow, I'm the only one in this team with this perspective, but everyone else here has something else important to say as well. Mm. I think for me personally, that's what I enjoy, because then you can be, we talk about your full self or bringing your whole self. But I think that's when it really comes out.
Okay. So yeah, good in a diverse group of people. And yeah, then you can really bring that to the table then. And, you know, Miranda, before you're talking about how you've felt comfortable working at Homes England, and you've recently set up the Homes England Neurodiversity Network, which, Jenny, you said you're a vice chair of as well, just a few minutes ago. So Miranda, could you tell me about the network?
So, yeah, the Homes England Neurodiversity Network came about by chance, really. I was a relatively newly diagnosed person, and I kind of felt a bit lost. I wasn't out in my workplace, and I was struggling with a few things, with trying to get people to understand what I needed and why I needed it. And I think I still felt very raw from the whole process. So by chance, I came across a couple of other neurodivergent people, and we started talking about how one particular development opportunity that was coming up just didn't really fit with us, and we felt like we could benefit if it were tailored to neurodivergent people. So the network sort of came together with us looking at one particular issue of there was a thing, and we had to work with Homes England, with the HR team and so on to get it adapted to meet our needs. And from that, we felt that we could actually do quite a bit more. We managed to get the adaptations we needed, and that was great. But it felt like there was a bigger cultural piece that we wanted to be part of. Homes England's got a few staff networks, quite a few, and they really sort of encourage us to get together and think about how we can change things. So that's how the network formed. We're only just over a year old, and we're still really early on our journey.
And what are your aims with the network?
So we have, I suppose, a big overall aim, which I would say crosses all of our staff networks, which is about creating an environment where we can be ourselves and we don't have to spend time and energy fitting into ways of working or feeling like we need to hide parts of ourselves to be accepted. There's still a lot of stigma around neurodiversity. People could assume you're less intelligent or you're less capable, or they've seen films about, say, autistic people that give them a particular view of what they're like. Although, interestingly, I think some of my colleagues knew I was autistic before I did, because they used to call me Rain Man. But, you know, people have ideas of what things are, and so it's not always safe to say to your manager, or it doesn't always feel safe to say to your manager that I am this and I need this. The biggest aim that we want across all of our networks is just to build a really inclusive culture. We've then got things that we're doing for the network which are more tangible actions, such as working with our recruitment team, working with our HR team on policies and processes, working with our digital team, rolling out training to help people understand and accept it more. So there's loads of work going on, and people have really embraced the idea of learning more about it and seeing what they can do differently.
That sounds great. And yeah, I wish you the best of luck with the network, and I hope it grows and achieves those aims. So just looking at Homes England and neurodiversity, so these are questions for Miranda and Jenny. I was going to ask, you know, aside from the network, what support is available for people with neurodiversity at Homes England?
So we're still early on our journey for neurodiversity, and I think actually most organisations are. It's only really come into light over the past sort of couple of years. For me, it's more about culture than anything else, and my favourite thing that we have at Homes England is a published plan to increase diversity and inclusion across all aspects of people. And it's got tangible actions, and the objective around an inclusive culture and fostering staff networks is owned by our chief of staff. And I think that sends a really clear message across the organisation that this isn't people have to go away and, you know, fix it or fit in themselves. This is a really clear message that at Homes England, this is important to us. And I think that's the level of commitment that you want when trying to build environments where people can be themselves. In terms of access to things to help people, we have been rolling out training, and we're working with our digital teams on helping improve the access to software, which might help people, working with our recruitment team to look at how we change the narrative of recruitment from being a particular type of person, does well at interviews or doesn't, to what skills do we need and who can bring those best to us. So there's some really exciting work going on with our recruitment team as well.
That sounds great. A lot of work and you know, it seems like the foundations which are needed to be, you know, reach that inclusivity which would be desired. I mean, do you have anything to add on that, Jenny, or has Miranda sort of covered it?
I guess it's important to say as well, we're starting to look at procurement and our supply chain. So going beyond what we can do as one organisation to support individuals within Homes England, I think it's also looking across the board at how we can work together for more systematic support for everybody.
And I think that's a really key point that Jenny's raised there, is at Homes England in particular, it's not just about us. We serve communities and across government, we're here to serve people, and we need to make sure that what we do, the homes we build, work for the population, and that includes 1 in 7 people as being neurodivergent.
Okay, and yeah, you know, it seems like it's being really embedded, sort of. You know, you mentioned the statement, and also in your work practices and your systems. So, you know, in terms of companies within the built environment, are these all the things they should be doing, and maybe what more should that also they be doing to be as inclusive as possible, would you say?
Yeah, and this is the key thing for me. Look, this isn't about putting in a quick fix of, you know, can we roll out some spelling and grammar software to help some neurodivergent people with the challenges. It's not about putting in quick fixes and adjustments for people to kind of patch up holes. It's about changing your culture. Companies should be reviewing their processes, their policies, and their ways of working. But neurodiversity doesn't happen in isolation. A big thing we need to consider is intersectionality of identities, and people can be in several marginalised groups. The other thing to consider is that diagnosis is a privilege. So having a formal or self-diagnosis shouldn't be the barrier to people accessing what they need. A really important point on that is that the vast majority of diagnostic criteria was set on white male children. So if you don't fall into that category, if you don't present in the same way, you're much less likely to be able to access a diagnosis. It's also heavily reliant on what services are available where you live, for example. So all of that to say, I guess, that we really need to strip it back and think about, why do you want things a certain way? And could it be more inclusive for everyone without having to disclose a diagnosis, which may or may not be safe, or they may or may not have it? Inclusive design is about building your organisation so that everyone can bring their full selves to work, and so that they can opt into using video or not using video, or reading a very, you know, detailed text-heavy announcement versus watching a quick vlog on someone talking you through it. All of the things that we do to change will help everyone, not just neurodivergent people, because people can opt into what works best for them, not what works best for the organisation. So the other key thing here, and again, it's not a neurodiversity specific thing, but creating a cognitively safe space, and that's the most important thing we can do for every marginalised group, is so that people know that it's safe not to fit into the way that your team or communicate or talk to each other to a degree that makes you uncomfortable, that you're not going to be ostracised or labelled as difficult if you raise things that are concerning you. And I think really, before we start talking about very specific policies and procedures, you need to make sure that it's safe for your people to speak up, And then that when they do, that you're really listening to them with the intent to understand.
And just taking that forward, if there are employers who want to give more support, but don't know how to go about this with neurodivergent people or other marginalised communities, as you were mentioning there, Miranda, before, I mean, what advice would you have? And maybe, Jenny, you'd like to go first in this one.
I think it's just starting conversations and looking to build understanding and reaching out, seeing what other people are doing across the industry, because there are some fantastic pockets of support. And I think bringing companies together to have these conversations, we could make property a far more inclusive industry. I think it's already a sector that attracts a number of people who are neurodivergent, but I think it could do more to support them in the way that they work best and retain them in the industry.
And is that also what you would say, Miranda?
Yeah, I agree with all of that. Really just start listening and finding out what people need. I think encouraging networks helps, because it creates a safe space for people to sort of talk and bandy ideas around and so on. And as Jenny said, you know, there's practical advice out there, and there are people willing to help. All of us that are in networks and that we found from other networks within the civil service and out in the industry that we've spoken to, everyone's really excited that there's an opportunity for us to change things. And so, you know, you'll probably find that people are really willing to help. I mean, workload permitting, obviously we're coming up to year end, so maybe not right now. But certainly even during this, Zoe and I have had a conversation about recruitment, because we're a little further along the journey than they are. And so actually, let's just share what we've learned and let's talk about it and see what might work as well. So, the most important thing for me is just getting your culture right and really questioning why you do things a certain way and could they be any different. But definitely ask around and you will find lots of people really, really passionate about this, wanting to help.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic to, you know, the point about listening and also, you know, it starts with creating an accommodating atmosphere where you feel comfortable offering your thoughts on how things could be improved, and having that there as a starting point, and then listening to what everyone has to say about how things could be improved is just a really good thing to take on board for any employer, you know, I'm sure. So just as a final set of questions I have for Jenny, and that's as a student at UCEM. So just to kick off, I mean, how have you found your studies with UCEM?
I'm really happy that I selected the MBA course. I highly recommend it for giving an overview of how organisations work. And at UCEM, the construction and real estate MBA is directly applied to our industry, so every module is relevant too. And because I've joined the course later in my career, after 15 years of working across property, from consultancy to being on site, the MBA course has enabled me to apply my experience to the different modules, and I think that's made the learning richer as well.
And how have you found the support at UCEM?
I think there's a fantastic support team which really encouraged me to apply for the Disabled Students Allowance. That isn't something that I'd ever thought of before. Previous to the course, I'd never really talked about myself being disabled, and I was really reluctant to reach out. But with the team's persistence, I eventually did apply, and on reflection, I would now recommend it because it provides technical support technology, but also access to a sort of coaching and mentoring, which has really helped me to understand my strengths and weaknesses. So I think the individual support for students is there and is really a great asset that more people could tap into. And from that, I've learned that there's a similar program in the workplace called Access to Work as well.
Right.
And so it's really useful to sort of know that the support doesn't end when you finish your university studies. UCEM is in a rare position to lead on building support for neurodiversity for three key reasons. So the first reason is connections. So UCEM is at the forefront of industry knowledge and partnerships across the built environment and construction. So if we could work in partnership with others that UCEM works with all the time, I think it could really have an impact across property. I think the digital experience at UCEM is a real advantage as well. So being mindful of digital exclusion and thinking about the website accessibility regulations and how they look at content and format and bringing the knowledge from the digital sector can really help with communication generally in education. And then I think finally, understanding what neurodiversity means in a practical sense has an advantage at UCEM because of its knowledge of apprenticeships. So I think as Zoe has touched on, there's already a lot of support in place for apprentices and spotting things like dyslexia and understanding that for someone to work their way through successfully, all of the training that comes with apprenticeships, both the class-based learning and also on site, means making sure the course is adapted to their learning style. So I think if you bring those three factors together, it really gives UCEM a chance to kind of take a leading role. And that's where I think I would encourage having a sort of overarching big picture strategy that's outward facing and looking to listen across the industry at what's already happening and then what part UCEM could play to making property generally more inclusive.
I understand that the subject of your MBA project focuses on support across the industry for your neurodiversity. So can you talk me through your project in a bit more detail?
I arrived at the idea for my MBA research project when I started to think that there's this support in university for neurodiversity, but I hadn't heard anything about what was available in the workplace. And so after talking to a few people, I started to focus in on neurodiversity networks. So there are diversity networks across organisations within property, and some of those, JLL, Deloitte, across government, and now at Homes England, have dedicated neurodiversity networks. So the project is just looking at the power of how networks can change culture within organisations and also the room for collaboration so that we improve inclusion for neurodiversity, but also look at other wider aspects of diversity at the same time. So if you're looking through the employee life cycle from recruitment and onboarding through to how you communicate with your line manager and appraisals, it seems that neurodiversity networks, where they exist in organisations, can really bring a perspective that can help change the process that will improve it for everybody.
So to wrap up, what would be the one piece of advice you would give to organisations, whether universities or built environment firms, to help bring about a more inclusive workplace? And Zoe, if you've got an answer for this one.
Yes, I think all employers, learning establishments, etc., they want the best talented people to work and study with them. And for those talented people to be able to perform to their best ability, enjoying and taking pride in what they do. An inclusive workforce is a workplace is essential to making that happen. And having an environment where your employees can bring their whole selves to work and show their full potential can only ever be beneficial to your business or organisation, and therefore, why wouldn't you do it? And we have amazing people out there like Miranda and Jenny who are showing how we can improve things. We just need to listen and learn.
I think that's a lovely statement there to end on. So thank you all for your time. If you'd like to find out more about UCEM's disability and wellbeing support, which includes plenty of advice and support, visit ucem.ac.uk/study-with-ucem/disability-wellbeing-support. But for more about Neurodiversity Celebration Week, visit neurodiversity-celebration-week.com. Thanks for listening.